You're listening to Met Radio 1280 AM CJTM online at metradio.ca. I'm Kinza Zafar with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. On Tuesday, over 100 Torontonians rallied in front of City Hall as Mayor Olivia Chow's 2026 budget sailed through council. The Fund Our City rally was organized by Social Plan in Toronto in collaboration with dozens of not-for-profit organizations and some unions. One of the groups was the South Asian Women's Rights Organization. I called them up ahead of the rally to hear why they decided to join.
That invests its dollars in people knows lives are worth saving.
The people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated.
You're listening to Met Radio 1280 AM CJTM online at metradio.ca. I'm Kinza Zafar with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. On Tuesday, over 100 Torontonians rallied in front of City Hall as Mayor Olivia Chow's 2026 budget sailed through council. The Fund Our City rally was organized by Social Planning Toronto in collaboration with dozens of not-for-profit organizations and some unions. One of the groups was the South Asian Women's Rights Organization. I called them up ahead of the rally to hear why they decided to join.
Our organization is speaking with our community members. Some of the main concerns that they're bringing to the budget rally are the issues around decent work, livable and decent work through city services and city contracted and city funded services, because these jobs, especially in the human services, especially in the healthcare caregiving, the PSW, the food service worker programs, we're seeing that these city jobs, also the city contracted or city funded jobs, these jobs continue to pay less than the living wage and are subjected to very precarious work arrangements, especially through the use of staffing agencies. I think some of the other issues that we're bringing to the city is the need for child care space. Right now, the City of Toronto continues to underinvest in creating more child care centers. Our communities like ours have long been considered a child care desert, and we haven't had, and these kinds of, well, child care generally a provincial issue. The city has a role in making sure that child care spaces are equitably allocated throughout Toronto and throughout the neighborhoods. That's something that we have yet to see. Additionally, there's other areas of investments. In public programming required, for example, investments in programming for women, youth, seniors, investments in recreational spaces. Given the multiple and compounding crises that our communities face, we need more services to address gender-based violence, services mm-hmm. for individuals who, are facing, who are precariously housed or have precarious immigration status. These are areas that the City of Toronto has the resources and infrastructure to step up and create unique responses and unique programming to address these needs. However, we are seeing that when it comes to the budget, that level of crises that our communities are facing in terms of housing, in terms of in terms of affordability, in terms of housing, in terms of childcare, they're not being, that level of urgency is not being reflected in the by the city budget.
That was Alicia Alum from the South Asian Women's Rights Organization. Her concerns about the budget not appropriately addressing gaps in social supports while inflating the police budget are echoed by other organizations who were present at Tuesday's rally. Here's Stacey Semple, the downtown chapter chair of ACORN, one of the city's biggest housing advocacy groups. She demands that the city increase its vacant home tax to 5% and expand it to include all units that are vacant in multi-residential buildings. She would also like to see increased funding for the city's multi-unit residential program, or MURA, to allow nonprofits and co-ops to buy at-risk privately owned affordable housing.
We all know RentSafe needs teeth. The city needs to begin to perform repairs when landlords neglect them, billing the cost back to the landlord via property taxes. This is key to my friends at 500 Dogs, who has been waiting far too long for the city to take action. This program is workable, but currently is too complacent. An extensive review needs to take place where stronger steps can be applied to negligent landlords.
Marianne Kozinitz from the Toronto Drop-In Network says that the housing crisis isn't the only crisis that Toronto is experiencing.
We are in the midst of a housing crisis, a food insecurity crisis, a drug poisoning crisis. Our community members are falling through the cracks of failed and broken systems due to changes in legislation and policy and cuts to funding. Those cracks are being filled by the drop-in sector. We have become Toronto's social safety net. Drop-ins provide essential services and are life-saving hubs for those who are unhoused, precariously housed, living with mental health challenges, using substances, and experiencing social isolation. They are a place for trans youth, for newcomers, and for seniors. They are a place for people where they can obtain food, resources, and find safety when needed. They are a place for connection and community building. They are a low barrier, non-judgmental place where people can be seen and feel a sense of belonging. The staff that work in drop-ins provide a vital connection where relationships and trust are built and healing can happen. Drop-ins provide essential services and need to be funded as such. And yet, they have historically and in the proposed 2026 budget have vastly been underfunded, and this is not sustainable.
The Toronto Drop-In Network is a coalition of over 50 organizations that have drop-in centers across the city. Marianne Kozinitz, who is the training and engagement coordinator at the Toronto Drop-In Network, says that she deputed to the city budget subcommittee 2 weeks ago to demand wage parity for drop-in workers. She says this is desperately needed as Toronto's unhoused population has doubled in the past 5 years. A drop-in space that the city is funding and expanding hours for is our public library. Librarian Alice Quinn, along with 14 other library workers, part of Local 4948, the Library Workers Union, came out to the rally to talk about the importance of collective strength. Alice Quinn is also an activist and union leader.
We're all standing up here for communities. And while public libraries across U.S. and Canada continue to face attacks, here in Toronto, along with the solidarity of our allies, labor organizations like Progress Toronto and the Labor Council, we've achieved the opposite. Additional staffing to account for the increase of safety and security challenge in branches, expanded hours and staff to provide increased supports for seniors, for newcomers, for the city's most vulnerable people, and expanded library renovations. Thanks to our friends and our supporters in Toronto, we've been able to remove fines and remove barriers and promote public libraries as our city's great equalizer. After facing so many challenges in past terms where City Council has attempted to close down branches, to cut funding, to reduce the number of staff available to assist Torontonians, it has been really refreshing these past few years to finally see a reinvestment in library workers and library services, to finally see the value of our work be recognized. But we all know that nothing is handed to us, and that behind every win is weeks and months, sometimes years, of tireless organizing, of hundreds of volunteers and committed activists, and the work is never over. We have to continue to hold our elected officials accountable and to fight for these investments. As library workers, we are passionate about our work because we see firsthand the difference it can make in our community. And we are standing here with you today to fight not just for Toronto today, but the Toronto of tomorrow. Invest in Toronto!
Now, you just heard Quinn mention that the city has increased library staffing in part due to safety concerns. So let's talk about safety for a minute. According to police data, while the police budget increases every year, crime in the Greater Toronto Area has actually been declining, and 2025 saw the lowest homicide rate in decades. The South Asian Women's Rights Organization, who we heard from earlier in this report, made it a point at the rally on Tuesday to discuss what the funds flowing to the cops could go towards
instead. Of protecting those who are most at risk, their priorities have shifted towards arresting people, exercising their fundamental right to protest in solidarity against genocides and injustices in Palestine and across the world, now enabled by the city's newly enacted bubble zone bylaw. Let's be clear about what community safety well-being is not. It is not an unaccounted for and overinflated police budgets. It is, however, strengthening public services and infrastructure. It is making sure that our communities have access to the resources that we need to lead stable, sustained, and fulfilling lives. This includes ensuring availability and access to services for women and youth, regardless of their immigration status. Adequately funding shelters, drop-ins, and truly affordable housing. Well-resourced and accessible community centers, child care centers and supports for our youth, and dignified livable jobs across all city services and city contracted services. With everything that's happening, the City of Toronto is uniquely positioned to pave a new path forward. One that models creative and stronger public policies and programming. One where the Toronto stands strong and resists austerity measures pushed forward by other levels of government. Toronto must come together as a united front. Labor, women, immigrant, youth, racialized and indigenous, to hold our governments accountable to fulfill its obligation for public response to multiple compounding and worsening crises faced by our communities.
The budget isn't all bad, and it was voted to pass unanimously by council later in the day. One of the biggest things that Torontonians are happy to see is fare capping. Aleem Thirani, an executive board member of the Amalgamated Transit Union, says that unlike previous mayors, Olivia Chow is listening to TTC riders.
Like this mayor and this city council, we get to listen to our million plus riders every day. Where previous regimes at City Council haven't listened to us or the public about funding a better city. I can tell you factually that this budget is not just beneficial for transit workers, but also for transit riders. Just key things like the fare capping. I'm just telling you, we get to talk to a bunch of our riders, and people can't afford $158 at the beginning of the month for a monthly pass. They just don't have that money.
Mayor Chow's fare capping policy means that you can ride free on the TTC after paying for 47 rides in a month. It takes effect later this year in September.
In the mayor's budget, there's a lot of really great things in the budget, including the TTC fare capping and fare freeze, extended library hours, increased supports for tenants, increased funding for arts and community programs and services, and of course further expansion of the school food and camp programs. So here today we're calling on council to support these great investments and then also dig a little bit deeper because the need in the city is so high.
That was Jin He, the executive director of Social Planning Toronto, the same group that organized Tuesday's Fund Our City rally. We've talked about various issues plaguing the Toronto community in this report, from the housing crisis to the drug poisoning epidemic. Brianna Olson-Pitawanakwat co-leads the Toronto Indigenous Harm Reduction Group and joined the rally to remind settlers in Toronto the role that colonialism continues to play when it comes to marginalizing the most vulnerable.
The fact that we have to remember is that the history of this country and the history of colonization has in many ways stoked and continues to run rampant on things like inequality, the idea that some can have and some cannot, the idea of not taking care of people in our community who are disabled or other, to tear down communities that are gender diverse or have differing gender sexuality. And these are the legacies that colonization has brought here. And I think it's really important that people understand that these legacies don't only impact Indigenous people, that they were used to literally clear our nations off of our traditional homelands, but they also are used to control every single person today and what we see as society and what we have become accustomed to that is actually not normal. It's not normal that people with disabilities and seniors are living outside, that people with disabilities have nowhere to travel or no way to get around, that homeless people continue to proliferate in a city that is one of the richest in not even Canada, but in North America.
That was a clip of Brianna drumming and singing after making her remarks at the rally. As the event was wrapping up and people were dispersing in front of City Hall, I had the chance to speak with Stacia Stewart, the Director of Research, Policy and Communications at Social Planning Toronto. Let's take a listen to that interview now. For Met Radio CJTM, I'm Kinza Zafar.
My name is Stacia Stewart, and I'm the Director of Research, Policy, and Communications at Social Planning Toronto.
Could you talk a little bit about what went into making this rally happen today?
Oh my gosh, we have over 18 community partner organizations that we worked with at Social Planning, and there's actually a citywide budget coalition, and all of those different groups kind of come together for quite a few months actually to prepare for the rally in terms of thinking about what are the important issues in the budget, what do they see as really great about the budget, what would they like to see more investments in and why. So they're actually pulling from their membership across communities to hear. They hold budget consultations on their own, talk to communities to see what is working well in the city, what needs more resources in the city, and what they'd like to see for a solid future for everybody.
And as we're wrapping up the rally, like, what are your thoughts? How do you feel like that went? Any key highlights?
I think that the rally was amazing. I think what I appreciate so much is how much heart there is and how much how rooted we are in the communities that are in this city, and how much, you know, really just hearing some of the stories from all of the individual speakers, the groups that came out who are working in our centers and our community centers and our food banks, and just hearing them share, like, this is what it's like in the day-to-day, and this is why we are holding up the city, you know, for what it is. And I think that's a really important thing for people to hear.
There was a lot of intercultural solidarity among the different groups that came out today. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we had a lot of community organizations and partner organizations talking about what it means to be working, you know, across sectors, across, you know, within our own cultural communities, and there's solidarity for across this group. And I mean, a lot of the groups have been working together for a long time, but there were also some newer members to the table. And I think that, you know, where that solidarity comes from is the belief in community as the strength of our city.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
where that comes from.
And do you have any general thoughts about Chau's mayorship or any hopes that you have going into the watch party today?
I think that, you know, under Mayor Chau's leadership, we have really seen a really good proposed budget actually come forward. This has been a really, really good year in terms of what has been invested in. And we, you know, while we heard today at the rally that there are calls for more investments, more strengthening, that really comes from the place of recognizing that we have incredible rates of high food insecurity in the city. We have really high rates of homelessness and poverty in the city, and we have too much money in Toronto for that to be happening. But we also recognize this was a really, really good year. There's protections for tenants. We saw protections around housing, in, you know, building shelters. It's not that the work is not happening, but our message really here is that we need more because the city needs more.
And is there anything else that SPT is working on that you're working on after the budget?
Yeah, after the budget, we kind of are going to turn our attention to the upcoming municipal election.
Yes.
We're going to get organized and talk to our partners and think about what does it look like and how do we make sure that all the Torontonians who want to be engaged in the election process have the opportunity to do so. So, you know, we'll absolutely have that information on our website, Social Planning Toronto, and we welcome anybody to come out and reach out to us and learn, grow, work with us, alongside us, always.
And we also have those two by-elections happening.
We do. We've got our eye on a lot. We've also got our eye on, you know, what kind of work needs to happen at the provincial and federal level in terms of, you know, recognizing that, you know, cities alone can't really fix some of these issues because we rely on our provincial and federal governments to provide some of the funding for us to do the work and to thrive as cities. So we are turning our attention, I guess you could say everywhere, to make this work happen and make sure that we're delivering a fair, well-funded city.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.